May it please the Court. Your Honors, this case is about Mr. Kilman's second claim for black lung benefits. In his first claim, he proved that he had black lung disease and that it arose from his 23 years of coal mine work. In the second claim, he had to first show that he was totally disabled to meet the material change in conditions standard. He gets paid as of the date that he filed the second claim. The second claim. On a refiled claim, it doesn't go back to the first one. Right. The court should reverse the remand because the judge did not make the proper total disability analysis, not once, but not twice. The statute and the regulations define a disability as a pulmonary impairment that prevents the miner from doing his last usual coal mine job or comparable work. And there are four ways to prove this, and the only one at issue here is the reasoned medical opinion. Well, there were actually two things that the judge didn't sort out. One was what Mr. Kilman actually did in his job, and the second was what each of these five medical experts knew about the job requirements. Now, Mr. Kilman did safety inspections in the mine. Every 20 minutes, he had to inspect that entire mine. There are eight faces in the mine. That's three times an hour. And eight faces, 60 feet each. And when he went through the tunnels, were only 4 foot 8 inches high because he worked in low coal. He's 6 foot one. He bent over. He had 30 pounds of equipment on his back just to get through these tunnels. That's where they're actually extracting the coal. He's underground. No, between when he reaches the face, he checks the air. No. An underground mine is not level. I've been in a few in southern Illinois. They're not level, but especially the tunnel passageways between each of these eight faces is not level. And he's and this mine was a low coal mine. Ceilings 4 foot eight. No, he has to do an entire inspection in 20 minutes. He has to do all 480 feet of inspection and get back to that first one within 20 minutes. When he's at the face, he's taking readings and he's checking the roof, and he's using a crowbar to poke up at the loose rock in the roof. And because that's a safety hazard. And after he's done with that 8 hour shift, he has 1 hour of setup to do for the next crew. And he's lifting and carrying 50 pound bags of rock dust. He's moving 150 pound barrels of oil. He's rolling these big huge buggy tires that are flat for the repairmen. I mean, he's constantly working for 9 hours a day, every day. Three an hour, 8 hours, 24. Maybe not quite that because he has a lunch break. I think it's easier when you're younger. He is. He's in his 60s now, and he did this job for 14 years. He was a face boss. When he was in his 50s. You know, and the thing about what these other doctors knew, there were five of them. It was 84, I believe, is when he... Right, right. You know, the judge never looked at what these doctors knew or didn't know. He just said, well, actually he did. Now, he quoted from the minor's testimony, and that's pretty accurate, except I don't think it's still clear if the judge knew that he was going 960 feet for every inspection. But Dr. Cohen's report, he examined the minor, and he took the work history, and he reported it. So there was no question that he knew what was going on. Now, this doctor, I guess Dahan was the first one. Didn't mention anything in his report at all about the guy's job. Nothing. Zilch. Said that impairment was not disabling, but he didn't know anything about the job. Then Dr. Rand says at deposition, when we were at deposition, I asked him, not the employer's counsel, but I did, what was his understanding of the walking requirement? He said 60 feet in that 20 minutes, and that's casual walking. Then he assumed 480 feet in that amount of time. He said still casual walking. Then he assumed that the miner's carrying, while he's walking, just carrying this 25 pounds of equipment. He says casual walking with light to moderate work. But he doesn't appreciate everything that's going on in that 20 minutes and had no idea about what he did for that hour after his shift ended. And then we get to Dr. Tudor, who writes four reports, says nothing about jobs, goes at deposition, he says, my understanding of his job is that he was a boss. So that means most of the time he supervised people, and from time to time he did what the boys did. That's exactly what he said. He did what the boys did. He didn't appreciate what he did, and the judge completely ignored the cross-examination about the job duties with Dr. Tudor. He admitted he didn't know the pace Mr. Kilman walked. He didn't know the number of units he had to cover. He didn't know if he worked in local. He didn't know if he carried equipment. And he didn't know anything about the 1 hour of work he did after his shift ended. And that's all relevant evidence that the judge ignored. They do not allow smoking in underground mines. He smoked not very long, not very much. and there's this fifth opinion from Dr. Baker, which I don't think that the judge really gave fair consideration of, because in his report, and he uses the standard form that he fills out for Kentucky State black lung claims. He check marks this line that says the impairment is non-disabling, but he goes on with this explanation about this guy still can't do low to moderate work with his pulmonary impairment. In a letter of explanation, he says, Mr. Kilman, I'm saying what I'm saying because the federal regulations require that your pulmonary functions have to be, can't be above 60% of predicted. And he said, so my opinion's based on the law, and I'm not saying you can't do this work. And the judge never considered that part of it. He also refused to determine whether from all of this evidence that respiratory impairment of Mr. Kilman prevented him from doing his work. And he actually refused, calling it a substitution of his opinion for the doctor's. But actually what he would have had to do was substitute the opinion of the doctors he relied on, because they didn't say anything about it. There would be no substitution for what Dr. Cohen said. That was a legal finding that he was required to make. And Judge Hillier did that in the Shunk case 15 years ago. He made that analysis in that case. And he actually criticized the physician in that case who didn't even discuss job duties or exertional requirements of the job, but he wouldn't do it here. So for these reasons, we request that the case be remanded for further review.
May it please the Court, my name is Laura Klaus. I'm counsel for Sahara Coal Trust, the respondents in this case. This case is a substantial evidence appeal, and this Court's holdings are uniform, repeated, and consistent that in substantial evidence appeals, the factual findings of the administrative law judge deserve deference, and the judge's findings deserve deference here. The judge explains what the duties of his job were based on. Sure. The judge is required, right. I believe he, hold on 1 second and let me just get his decision, which is rather lengthy. And it may well have been in the original decision where the discussion of the physical demands were.
It seems to me that the judge really does not, in a definitive way, on this last when the board has told him, you need to decide. ALJs decide all the time what the nature and demands of the job are. So that's certainly not something that would invade the physician's process. Whether it's vocational experts or physicians, their opinion is only as good as the correlation, is their understanding of what the physician has to decide. And if these doctors were all over the block, they thought it was just kind of supervisory work, yelling out, and some of them thought it was 60 feet, and some of them thought other things. It doesn't leave one with any confidence that finding the fact had any basis.
Well, what the board instructed the judge to do, though, on remand, was to consider the doctor's opinions. And the judge is limited. No, but here we have, because here, but that's not what the claimant has alleged. Here, Mr. Kilman has alleged that Dr. Cohn had adequate knowledge of the minor's demands. That's not accurate, though. What the judge found, what the judge found was that all of the doctors had the same information as Dr. Cohn, since they reviewed his report. And he finds... You may not, but that's not what we have here. We don't have a doctor saying all he did was sit in a chair all day and point to people and direct them. That's true, and if you look at Dr. Tudor's opinion, he did know what this man did in his job. And I apologize. No, the 60-foot figure was the distance between the pillars, between the sites that he inspected. Of course it is. So take Dr. Wren's testimony. And Well, we're not getting rid of Dr. Tudor because I don't agree that Dr. Excuse me. I think it meant that he was a working foreman. There are some foremen who do not do any physical labor. There are other foremen who work with the men. I think he was a working foreman. The important thing is... I don't read Dr. Tudor's opinion that way, and I guess the ultimate decision maker here would be the judge.
I have the same question, Judge. Where in this mass of papers does the administrative law judge explain why physical exertion is required in illness?
He does it through, I believe, at page, the appendix at page 25 to 26. He goes through the exertional requirements and the claimant's testimony as to what the exertional requirements were. It continues on to page 27. Then the ALJ... Yeah, the appellate number. So it's in the ALJ's decision from August of 2002, the slip-up at page 12 to 14. He goes through what the claimant testified about his demands. He then looks at the medical opinions. All of the doctors considered the same demands.
So where does he wrap it up? He recites what the claimant testified to. Are we to... Actually, I wrote in the margin here, page 14, wrap up, question mark, because he suddenly goes from quoting the claimant's testimony on page appendix 27, the record contains five recent medical reports. If we're to assume that the ALJ has accepted every word of what the claimant testified to, that makes the doctor's opinion even more worrisome.
Well, it's one of two things. It's either that the ALJ adequately considered the doctor's reports, the doctors adequately considered the exertional demands and rendered opinions, there was conflicting evidence, the ALJ resolved it, or none of the doctor's opinions are adequate, in which case the ALJ properly denied the claim. Maybe we would, because...
He knows everything, so I know that maybe we would be here, but it certainly would be a different case. He said, I'm awarding benefits this time because I have chosen to credit Dr. Cohen, the only physician who understood the exertion requirements of the job.
And then in his decision, when he discusses Dr. Tudor and went on remand, he explains that all of the doctors considered Dr. Cohen's report. Dr. Tudor reviewed the report of Dr. Cohen. This is at page 15 of the ALJ's decision. And in so doing, reviewed the minor job duties as listed by Dr. Cohen. Dr. Wren explained what the minor's pulmonary function test showed in terms of his exertional abilities. What they showed was that he was capable of 6.15 mets of physical labor, that the average coal mine employment involves 3.3 mets. He took the test results, the objective test results, and he compared them to what this claimant could do in terms of functional demands and found that he could do his usual coal mine employment. That is substantial evidence supporting the ALJ's decision. Dr. Dehan did take into account the functional demands of the claimant's usual coal mine employment. No, they're important to consider, but the point... This is part of the doctor's testimony. They looked at the entire picture, and they concluded...
...recognizing that from time to time a boss may have to do what the boys did, he would have to lift heavy objects. Now, he would have to walk. He would have to carry heavier objects from time to time, but mostly it's a
seems to think that Tillman would only be exerting.
Well, that's accurate with what Tillman testified were his exertional requirements. And if you look at the record, the if you look at the records exhibit number 5, which what you have to accept is that the ALJ said, fine, I'll take what Dr. Cohn knew of the physical demands of this miner's usual coal mine employment, which is what the claimant has suggested all along, that Dr. Cohn had adequate knowledge of what this man did. All of the other doctors reviewed Dr. Cohn's opinion. Dr. Cohn has 3 opinions, and the one that was based on the physical examination, which was the first one, I think it's October of 1997, is the director's exhibit 60. All of the doctors reviewed all 3 of Dr. Cohn's opinions. Dr. Tudor did in his most recent report and on deposition. Dr. Wren did in his most recent report and on deposition. And Dr. DeHaan did in his most recent report and deposition. Well, I think you have to read the reports as a whole. I think they had adequate understanding of what this man did. They had as good of understanding as Dr. Cohn did. I think that the ALJ accepted the doctor's disagreement with Dr. Cohn's assessment of the extent of impairment as demonstrated on the objective test, and the ALJ found that. That's what the doctors did, though. The doctors' opinions couldn't be clearer.
Well, they know that they read Cohen's report, but that doesn't mean they accepted or agreed with or understood or paid attention to what Cohen did. Their focus is probably on Cohen's medical opinions rather than on the description of what Tillman does. By the way,
but there are other opinions besides Dr. Tudor's, and I think that those opinions are substantial evidence. If the court or the board were the fact finders, they might have gone a different way. They might draw different inferences, but that's not the court's job in this circumstance. It's to determine whether there is substantial evidence, and there is, in the form of Dr. Wren's opinion, in Dr. DeHaan's opinion, and I submit in terms of Dr. Tudor's opinion as well.